We all buy stuff, food, clothes, TVs, insurance, cars, phones, a home, but do we always buy what we actually want? Do we ever pay the right price, or could we have fallen victim to the nodding donkey or the puppy dog, the slash and grab, or any of over 100 sales techniques commonly used by people who want us to buy something from them? You may have been that salesperson. You may have been the person doing the buying. Either way, you're going to enjoy the man I'm about to talk to more often than most of us realise and would like to admit. We are seduced by skillful, seductive sales techniques into buying things we had absolutely no intention of buying or paying as much of when we went into the shop or the showroom in the first instance. And that's why the author David Craig has written a book called Don't Buy It: The Tricks and Traps Salespeople Use and How to Beat Them. And he wants to expose the huge variety of tricks and traps that are out there and used to sell to us, because the more we know about them, the more easily we'll all be able to spot them and avoid being suckered. And he joins us now this morning. Good morning to you, David.
Good morning.
Can we talk a little bit about some of the tricks of the trade that you've been talking about in your book? We'll deal with car sales for starters. How do we spot somebody who's trying to pull the wool over our eyes?
Well, the car salesman's trick, the main one, is to slow things down. They know we don't feel comfortable in a car sales outlet, so they keep us there a long time, 90 minutes, say. Then it's easier to, we get impatient, we want to leave, so it's easy for them to sell us lots of extras after they sold us the car, as we will probably just say yes in order to get out of there.
Why do you think it is that people are uncomfortable in a car sales room?
Because you realize you're in an unfamiliar. I mean, one of the reasons I wrote this book was that with the last car I bought, even though I've been in sales for 20 years, I got completely fleeced, and in what they call back ending, which I didn't even know exist. What they do is they sell you the car, and you negotiate a little bit, and you finally do a deal, and you're relieved. You think, oh, good, that's over. Then suddenly they take you to the office and say, let's just finish off the paperwork. And then they start selling you extra treatments, extra insurances, gap insurance, special warranties, all kinds of other stuff. And it's they exhaust you, they grind you down until you buy them.
Okay, so what you call the front of shop is the nice bit where you go, there's a big shiny new car. And then they bring you down for the ultimate shakedown, which says, here are all the extras. And before you know it, you walk out a broken man.
That's right. You think you've finished the deal once you've bought the car,
yeah.
but actually they make very little profit on the car. It's in the back ending when they sell all the extras. That's where the real money's made, because some of them have 90% profit margins.
Right. So within that back ending, and you're sitting in the office, and the person is saying to you, "Well, we need to do this. We need that." They also have other little tricks they can do, like you described the absent authority.
The absent authority is a front of shop one. That's
right.
when you're trying to buy the car, and you're sort of saying, "Oh, that's expensive, and can you knock something off?" And the salesman might say, "Okay, we can take €300 off or whatever," and you say, "Well, you can do more." And then the guy looks at you pleadingly, says, "Oh, I can't go any further. My boss will kill me if I knock the price down any further." You know, and then he says, "But I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll go speak to my manager." So off he goes. He might be away 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Because the longer he's away, the more you're thinking, oh, he's really fighting with the sales boss to get a good deal for me. Then he comes back and he makes you another little concession. Your problem there is the person you're really negotiating with, the sales manager, isn't there. He's the absent authority. But you can use the absent authority against the salesperson as well. For example, if the salesperson says, this is the best we can do, you can say, well, I'd like to take it, but my wife told me that I shouldn't do a deal today unless we could get something really special, and therefore I can ring her if you want. And then you ring your wife or whoever, your partner, whatever, and you come back and you say, well, they've said if you throw in the air conditioning, we'll take it. And then the salesman, they can't negotiate with the absent authority, who is your wife or your partner. So that trick can be played both ways.
Yeah, so you're negotiating with ghosts.
That's right, and well, you can't negotiate with the ghosts.
Precisely.
That's
the point, yeah.
And that's the trick there.
Yeah, it's a good trick, I have to say. Tell me about the sneer.
The sneer is great especially if you're buying something and your family's there, or if you're buying a car for, say, a child or a partner or whatever, and you really don't want to pay for the one they're offering, and so the salesman sort of looks a little bit askew at you and says, well, we do have a cheaper model if that's what you want, hugely embarrassing you in front of your family, of course.
Yeah.
And so you sort of feel an emotional pressure, oh, okay, I'll buy this one at the price you're selling.
there's an enormous psychological warfare involved in what should be a fairly simple purchase, isn't there?
Absolutely. What I wanted to point out in the book was by talking about all the different ways people sell to us, and by listing more than 100 tricks with the names, the nodding donkey, the sneer, etc., I wanted to make people realize these are not normal conversations we're having with salespeople. They have this bag of tricks in their mind, and all the time they're thinking, which one shall I use next? Mm. The absent authority, the sneer, there's so many. The more we're aware of these, the more we can spot them.
So it's essentially like all of us in our day-to-day lives. If you meet somebody, you kind of have them sized up within 30 seconds, and presumably salespeople will see you coming through the door and go, okay, we've got an easy sell, soft sell, hard sell. They can nearly profile you within seconds of you walking through the door.
That's right. They'll ask a couple of questions, look, what sort of thing you're looking for. And I mean, the first thing they'll try and assess is, are you an optimist or a pessimist? Are you a glass half empty or a glass half full? If you're a glass half full, they'll sell you on the dream. This will make you feel better. Your friends will admire you, all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. If you're a bit more cautious, they'll start selling you, well, we have all these guarantees and all these customers have been so happy with this. And so they reassure you. So absolutely, they adapt immediately to the kind of character that they assess that you are.
Now, in this country, even today, now we have the property section comes out in one particular paper, and you can see the houses are going up in price after, you know, a few years in the slump, and people are watching it cautiously. And yet, that's one thing, seeing the prices. When you go to buy the house, estate agents, now we're really into a labyrinth of emotional warfare when we're trying to buy a house and dealing with estate agents. All very nice people, no doubt, but they have their ways and means.
Absolutely. I mean, for a start, the estate agent has to get as many sellers signed up as possible. Mm. So they're not going to, if they do a so-called valuation of your house, they're not going to tell you it's worth less than you think you can get for it. So they're going to do what we call the overvalue. They're going to quote whatever price you think you should get. And you'll think, oh, great, great, because obviously you're going to sign up with the estate agent who gives you the highest price. Mm-hmm. It's only later that they start to do the price slash, where they start to wear you down by getting lower offers than you'd expected. But by then you've signed up with them, so it's too late.
So that's what you call the sucker sign-up, is to say, oh, your house is gorgeous. You'll easily get €350,000 for, you know yourself in your heart to hearts, if you've half a brain, that it'll only get 300 tops, maybe 310 at a push. But yet you kind of become a little beguiled, a little sucked in. And that's part of the trickery of sales.
Absolutely. And they'll say, oh, this orange lounge that you've done is so stunning. People will be queuing up to buy a house with an orange lounge and a green kitchen. And of course, it's all rubbish.
Yes. And you mentioned in your book, David, the phantom buyer. And again, we're dealing with that kind of spectral influence in the selling technique.
Yes. I mean, if when the valuer is going around your house, they'll probably say, oh, we've had quite a few people looking for a house or flat just like this. And they might even do a trick called the phone-a-friend, where they said, just let me ring the office and I'll check. And they ring up and they say, was that those two couples who were looking for a 3-bedroom near the main road, blah, 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 are they still interested? And they'll, yes, absolutely. And they'll come back. Yeah. So you get the feeling, crikey, if I don't sign up with this estate agent, there's all these buyers there ready to take my house. So I've got to sign up with them. Mm. And it's only once you sign up that these buyers, the phantom buyers, suddenly disappear.
Yeah. And the difficulty with that is that you never know really whether, you know, it's like Donald Rumsfeld, there are known knowns and there are unknown knowns. You actually don't know if they're there or not.
That's right. I mean, there's always a good excuse that they found somewhere else, they've decided not to move, the person going buying their house didn't buy, the chain broke through. There's always a wonderful excuse, but these people do tend to disappear quite quickly once you've signed with an estate agent.
Right, well, let's go through some of the sellers' tricks and traps. You give us an A to Z. We'll pick up some of our top favourites. I particularly like the chicken question.
The chicken question is wonderful for the seller. Chicken questions, when we ask things like, well, what will happen if it doesn't fit in, or what will happen if the system, my people don't understand how to work the system, or it shows we're about to buy, and then they know they've got us, and they can just have to couple more excuses or a couple more reasons, and then they've got us to buy. So it shows we're the chicken, we're afraid, and they've caught us.
Yeah, I've seen that happen a few times. Elsewhere, the Einstein cell as well as an eye-catching headline for that one.
The Einstein cell is when they try to, they flatter us. They say, oh, somebody who knows about wines like you, or somebody who has good taste and design like you, would buy this house or whatever. So they appeal to our vanity and make us feel like Einstein, we are so intelligent, or somebody who understands about electronic products like you would surely buy this higher level tablet, whatever.
Yes, you'd appreciate this one, which is a little shinier and significantly more expensive. Now, if we talk about the guilt cell, we'll know that again, this will ring a bell for a lot of people.
Yeah, I get on my email each day when I go in, a little ad appears with a baby looking shocked and saying something like, "What? You've no life insurance?" So I don't have kids, so I don't care. But it's appealing to our guilt to protect our family. People selling insurance, people selling burglary protection, that sort of stuff. It's making us feel guilty that we're not doing enough to save, or selling us a car, getting one with extra safety features, making us feel guilty. Well, it would be terrible if an accident happened and somebody got injured.
Yes, yes. I think they do that with gun sales in the States as well. You're not protected by having a double action punk, et cetera, et cetera.
All right.
The nodding donkey, you alluded to the nodding donkey a few minutes ago. Tell us about that.
The nodding donkey is a very simple one where they get you to keep nodding to a series of questions like, so this is a right size of house you want? Yes. This is in roughly the right area? Yes. It's got roughly the right sort of distance from the school? Yes. You're nodding. And then say, well, I suppose you'd want to make an offer then, won't you? Mm-hmm. And it does actually work as a psychological process. As you keep nodding and agreeing to these so-called mini agreements, it sort of drags you into buying, to making the offer, to going ahead with the sale.
Because you find the whole experience very agreeable and you're in a very positive frame of mind, I suppose, because you've done all that nodding, which suggests you're on the right road.
That's right.
You would talk about, we'll take a couple more, which is the monkey or the organ grinder. I think everyone in who goes shopping with another half is either fits into one of those roles comfortably.
Yes, well, it's not a nice expression for them. But
it's brilliant.
One thing the salesperson is trying to assess all the time is, who is going to make the buying decision? Who's the banker? And that's the organ grinder. And so and who's the monkey? So especially with couples, they really want to find out who has the emotional control over, will this thing be bought or not? And of course, car salesmen are taught to, one thing they do is they give a business card, if it's a man and a woman, or two women or whatever, they'll give a business card to each of them, because they want to treat them as equals and not look like they think one is going to be the buyer and the other one isn't, because they still have to suss out who is going to make the decision and who do they really need to appeal to.
What's the overriding lesson for the average consumer walking into a shop, sale room, whatever it might be? What's your key piece of advice for the typical shopper?
The timid salesmen have skinny kids. The salesman has to get their commission to keep their job. They have to sell second items, third items, all sorts of extras. They are under massive pressure. And we found out, of course, in our banks, in my local branch, when I go in, I can see in the back office a big flip chart with the names of all the front office staff with their sales targets for the week. Even my dentist, every time I go see him, he tries to sell me teeth whitening or veneers or something. Everybody is selling to us now. And the more we understand about how they do it, the tricks they use, all the traps, the techniques, the more that we can defend ourselves against them and not be taken in.
All right. Well, thank you for your time this morning. It's been good to talk to you. David Craig is the author of Don't Buy It, The Tricks and Traps Salespeople Use and How to Beat Them.